We take a look at some of the top stories in national politics. A broad anti-hate resolution has passed the U.S. House. The Democratic National Convention will be held in Milwaukee in 2020. And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said this week she's against trying to impeach President Trump. And that's our question for you. How do you feel about Pelosi's opposition to impeachment proceedings? If you're a Democrat, are you upset by that stance, or do you think it's a good call? If you're a Republican or somewhere in the middle, what do you think? Do you think pursuing impeachment would be politically costly for Democrats? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Reed Wilson is a national correspondent for The Hill. He's also the author of the book Epidemic, Ebola, and the Global Scramble to Prevent the Next Killer Outbreak. Reed, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start with this anti-hate resolution passed in the U.S. House last week after a lot of twists and turns. It started focusing on anti-Semitism after tweets from Democratic Representative Ilhan Omar about the influence of a pro-Israel lobbying group. Untangle this one for us.
So this is actually the second resolution that has come after Congresswoman Ilhan Omar made made two different comments. First of all, where there were comments on Twitter last month where she questioned the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, the AIPAC, which is one of the big lobbies here in D.C., suggesting that some politicians support Israel for money reasons. And, of course, that plays on some anti-Semitic tropes that that a lot of people were outraged about. Republicans forced a vote on an anti-Semitism resolution last month. Now, Ilhan Omar was speaking about that very controversy at a coffee shop here in Washington, D.C. It's actually one I pass on my commute home, where she's made a comment about how there are effectively dual loyalties, which is another anti-Semitic trope, and one that that caused a lot of angst in Minnesota, not just in Minnesota, but also here in Washington. So members of Congress, Democrats in Congress, wanted to pass a resolution condemning anti-Semitism. They broadened that out, though, to include things like anti-Muslim sentiments after an exhibit in West Virginia compared Ilhan Omar to the September 11th terrorists. There were the resolution passed by an overwhelming majority in the House of Representatives, but it's just another one of these moments where Democrats wanted to be talking about their agenda. They just took back control of the House of Representatives on the strength of a huge number of new young members. Ilhan Omar is only 37 years old. There are a lot of other members who are as young or younger than she is who have joined this Republican or the Democratic majority, and instead their agenda has been derailed by things that cannot be described as anything other than a massive distraction.
23 Republicans ended up voting against the resolution. One voted present. I think Glenn Grothman of Wisconsin voted against it. Have we heard from any of those no votes about why they voted against it?
Yeah, the explanations ranged from the resolution got to be too broad and not focused on the actual incident that were, Congressman Omar's tweets and comments. And then some other people, I'm blanking on who it was, but somebody said that he voted against it because it didn't have protections for, it didn't express support for Caucasians and for Christians. So, the sort of reasons for voting against varied, but they were mostly because the Republicans didn't feel that the Democratic measure or resolution really got to the heart of the matter.
Talking to Reed Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill, looking at some of the top issues in national politics over the last week. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi confirmed this week that she opposes the idea of starting impeachment proceedings against President Trump, saying he's, quote, just not worth it. What's been the reaction from her fellow Democrats to those comments?
Well, it looks like there are at least a couple of Democrats who are still interested in pursuing impeachment. Congressman Gene Green from Texas, Congresswoman Rashid Tlaib from Detroit have said that they would introduce impeachment articles. But by and large, I think this is something that we're hearing from the majority of senior Democrats, the people who are in the position to hold impeachment hearings. Congressman Jerry Nadler, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee from New New York has also sort of tapped the brakes on impeachment. And basically what everybody's waiting for right now is the Mueller report. You know, what is Robert Mueller actually going to say in his report, or what is the Attorney General going to say in his report on Robert Mueller's report, which is the first thing that we'll actually see when, if and when anything comes out. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is a conversation that Democrats are very leery of having because they see it as a hugely divisive issue at a time when, you know, their presidential candidates are beginning their conversation about 2020. And that's not something that Democrats want to hand President Trump as the cudgel of, you know, look at these guys just coming after me nonstop. So Pelosi pumping the brakes is probably welcome news to about 95% of the Democrats in Congress. But to that other 5%, I mean, those are the people who go on MSNBC and CNN.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Anne is with us in Green Bay. Anne, hello.
Hello. Well, I, as a Democrat, do not want to impeach Trump. I think he's one of the best things that's happened to the Democrat Party. And in Wisconsin, we had a recall of Scott Walker, which totally backfired and came back to bite us. So I would like things to stay as they are.
Anne, thanks for the call. A different process, but Anne's worried about a similar result. If an impeachment effort happened and failed, she thinks it could bite Democrats come 2020.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the impeachment process, were it to happen today, would almost certainly fail. Not just, I mean, it may pass the House of Representatives, and therefore President Trump would be impeached. But remember, the Senate has to actually hold the trial and vote on removal, which is different from impeachment. And there are not the votes in a Republican-controlled Senate to impeach the president. It would be a moment in which Democrats would sort of be caught out as blocking the president, or trying to remove him from office. And that could have ramifications, you know, not just for this moment in politics and for the 2020 elections, but in the long run, as Americans look at a president who was elected and a party that tried to remove him from office. You know, that's not something that goes away lightly, and it's something that history would remember.
And Anne hit on another point that I've been hearing out there, Reid, on the politics again of impeachment, the idea that President Trump in office might be helpful for Democrats. Running against him in some ways may have helped them in 2018. We can see probably a lot of House hearings on various aspects of the Trump campaign and Trump presidency that might, some Democrats might think, be better for them than an actual impeachment, successful or otherwise.
Yeah, and I've been talking to a lot of my Democratic friends around the city, some of whom are involved in sort of plotting the 2020 campaigns for various candidates. And you know, a lot of them will say something to the effect of the corruption message that they hope to tie around President Trump. It can be effective, but it's not something that a lot of voters pay attention to. They don't see that their own party has figured out a way to talk about things like corruption until these investigations begin. And the hope is that the investigations coming through the Judiciary Committee or the Government Oversight Committee will eventually lead to a narrative that Democrats can use in 2020.
We're talking to Reid Wilson, correspondent at The Hill, about the week's top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think when you hear the word impeachment in current American politics? Good idea, bad idea? On the merits, do you think it's justified? Politically, who do you think it helps and hurts? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Coming up, Democrats coming to Milwaukee next year. We'll look at some of the politics behind that. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Reid Wilson, national correspondent at The Hill, talking about some of this week's news in national politics. Couple more thoughts on the impeachment issue we've been talking about. We'll go to our callers again with Randy in Ripon. Randy, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. I just find it odd that we impeached a president for telling one lie, which was Bill Clinton, and we got a president who sold over 8,700 lies in 2 years worth of time. And it just seems like a huge double standard. And like Bill Maher said, if we don't impeach him, where is the bar? I just seem so irresponsible to me.
Randy, thanks for the call, and specifically read Bill Clinton, I believe, impeached in the House for obstruction of justice and perjury, lying under oath. Is there talk in Washington that, yeah, maybe Donald Trump has hit some standard like that, obstruction of justice or other crime that rises to the level of impeachment?
Yeah, there's talk of it, but it sort of matters about who's doing the talking. Congressman Jerry Nadler, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, which is the committee where impeachment hearings would begin, has said that, you know, he would lay out a sort of a three-tiered system by which to figure out whether or not a president has done something that is impeachment worthy. And it's a three-tiered system that actually came out of the Clinton impeachment. It begins with figuring out, you know, whether he has committed a crime, whether that crime rises to the level of impeachment. I mean, he's not going to get impeached over, you know, parking tickets or something like that. And then whether or not the impeachment could be seen. Oh, sorry about that. Something in my throat.
That's okay.
Whether or not the impeachment could be seen as sort of a nonpartisan investigation and then removal from office. You know, if the evidence points to something that is so bad that even Republicans say, yeah, okay, it's time to reach that level, then that is the, sort of the third tier. That's a pretty high bar, and that's why Speaker Pelosi is sort of backing off the notion that impeachment is coming anytime soon.
So we got another caller on impeachment before we move on to some issues close to home in Wisconsin. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I agree with the last caller that there has to be some degree of impartiality and bipartisanship for the impeachment. What does bother me is like the recent revelation that Lisa Page said the Department of Justice halted Hillary Clinton's indictment for her scandal, yet we're now going to try to impeach the president for paying off some bimbos. I guess the real answer is, what is the correct way to go forward, and can't we get together and compromise and get along with each other to go forward?
Charlie, thanks for the call. The various issues they're talking about with President Trump include those payments, but also concerns about obstruction of justice. But Reed, the idea of a nonpartisan standard seems to not work so well in Congress these days on any issue, much less impeachment.
Yeah, and the fact is that President Trump is the single most polarizing figure in, I don't know, American political history. Is that too extreme to say? You know, the vast majority of Americans either absolutely love him or absolutely hate him. There is not much of a middle there, and that I think is one of the driving concerns the Democrats have. They don't want to be seen as engaging in partisan witch hunts. It didn't work well for the Republicans under President Obama, and it's not a look that Democrats want to embrace now.
Thanks for the call, Charlie. We're talking to Reed Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. And this week, Wisconsin is one of the top stories in national politics. The Democratic Party said they're going to hold their 2020 national convention in Milwaukee. Here's Party Chairman Tom Perez speaking at the Fiserv Forum on Tuesday.
Where you hold a convention is a very strong statement of your values. It's a very strong statement of who we are as a party. And who and what we're fighting for.
All right, Reed, what do you see in this statement, in this choice of Milwaukee?
So I am a nonpartisan and objective journalist, but I am absolutely thrilled that we're doing this thing in Milwaukee as opposed to, you know, Houston and Miami are lovely cities, but it's a little hot in Houston in July. So Milwaukee, I hear, is wonderful in the summer. I'll look forward to being out there. I think this, what the Democrats' decision says, is that they are committed to rebuilding what's called the Blue Wall. The Blue Wall was the 18 states in the District of Columbia that voted for the Democratic presidential candidate in six consecutive presidential elections. And President Trump was the one who broke that blue wall in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. Wisconsin and Michigan. Pennsylvania wasn't a part of the blue wall. So if Democrats see their path back to the 270 electoral votes that they need, it goes through a state like Wisconsin. Wisconsin is going to be one of the most hotly contested targets for both sides come November. So I highly suggest that everybody, first of all, continue listening to NPR, and second of all, continue buy a DVR or something if you don't want to be overwhelmed by campaign advertisements. But this is, you know, this is the path back to 270, and it is not lost on Democrats that, you know, Hillary Clinton didn't show up in Wisconsin in 2016. They are certainly not making that mistake again, and putting the convention there tells me also that, that the Democrats see their path through those Great Lakes states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, as an easier path to 270 than they do maybe taking a moonshot and trying to win states in the Sun Belt like Texas, Arizona, and Georgia.
That said, holding your convention in a state doesn't mean you're going to win the state.
Very true.
Least a couple times in recent memory, Democrats and Republicans have both lost elections in states where they held their national convention.
Yeah, Democrats held their 2012 convention in Charlotte, and President Obama lost North Carolina. Republicans held their 2008 convention in Minneapolis-St. Paul, and John McCain lost Minnesota, although Minnesota has been trending towards ours in the last couple of years. So no guarantee, certainly, but it is, you know, this is the greatest moment that any political party has to show off their talent, their ideas. It's basically, you know, 4 days of free advertising. This is a time when Democrats have decided to bring that 4 days of free advertising straight to the heart of Wisconsin.
Later in the show, we're going to be asking our listeners to call in with what you think people should know about Milwaukee or Wisconsin when they travel here for that 2020 convention, what they should do, eat, where they should go. You can start now on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Reed, another Wisconsin story that's getting national attention, apparently. I didn't really know this. You wrote about it. Our Wisconsin Supreme Court race. That's got some buzz nationwide.
Yeah, and I see this as an early test for the two parties as they try to engage in Wisconsin. You know, Democrats had a really successful year in 2018. Obviously, you know, Governor Evers knocked off Scott Walker, and Democrats won the Attorney General's race and a bunch of other contests, as well as that Supreme Court race that you had last year. Now, is that energy that Democrats had in 2018 going to continue into 2019 and eventually 2020, or will Democrats say, well, we won back the House, we'll rest on our laurels, and they might not turn out at greater rates. The interesting thing, the sort of the long-term prospect here is that Democrats and Republicans have the opportunity to solidify their respective majority on the state Supreme Court. Now, of course, these are technically nonpartisan elections, but they're nonpartisan in name only. That's kind of a joke. And the fact is that there are four conservatives and three liberals on the state Supreme Court now. This race is a race to replace one of the three liberals, Justice Abramson. And next year there will be a race to decide the fate of Justice Kelly, one of the conservative members of the court. So if the Democrats win this year, they have an opportunity that at that 4-3 deficit right now to win back effectively control of the state Supreme Court next year, when the election will take place on the same day that Democrats go to the polls to pick their presidential nominee. That sounds like a real big turnout driver to me, and it means that effectively control of the court is at stake this year, and then once again next year. You know, if Republicans win this year, they'll solidify that 4-3 majority no matter what happens next year. And bottom line, you know, the big fights this decade were all about, you know, Act 10 and Scott Walker's union-shaping legislation, and next decade, the big fights are all going to be about redistricting. Democrats say that the state is badly gerrymandered, that violates their constitutional rights. You know, a 4-3 liberal majority on the court would have something to say about that.
We have invited both of the state Supreme Court candidates, by the way, to join us next week on Central Time. We've extended those invitations. Hope to hear from them both. And before we let you go, Reed, we'll leave Wisconsin reluctantly and go back to the U.S. Senate. They're scheduled to vote on this resolution already passed by the House aimed at blocking President Trump's national emergency declaration for border wall funding. There's some late drama. What's going on there?
Well, there are more and more Republicans who are signing on. At least five Republicans have said publicly that they will vote against President Trump's declaration of an emergency. And it runs the gamut from, you know, the two blue state Republicans, Cory Gardner from Colorado, Susan Collins from Maine, to the much more conservative sort of libertarian wing of the party, Rand Paul from Kentucky, Mike Lee from Utah. They all say that, you know, the president is not justified in making this decision. There were some last-minute negotiations to try to to tone down the emergency resolution or something like that. Those fell apart earlier today, and if President Trump loses this vote, he'll be forced to veto it in order to preserve his emergency declaration. That's still a pretty embarrassing vote to lose, especially when your party controls the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, this late scramble to come up with an idea to say, okay, we're not going to try to block the emergency declaration, but we promise in a month or so we're going to try to water down the power of presidents to have emergency declarations. That was a compromise some were aiming at.
Yeah, and I mean, this is sort of the summation of a 50-year-long power bleed from Capitol Hill to the White House and straight down Pennsylvania Avenue. And Democrats and Republicans have both sort of allowed the president over time to acquire more and more power. When the president acquires more and more power, they get to do things like declare an emergency that Congress disapproves of. So I think, you know, at some point, whether it's now or in the very near future, I think you're going to see a real substantial move to claw back some power from the executive to the legislative branch and sort of rebalance that balance of power that's gotten seriously out of whack basically since Watergate.
And briefly, Reid, as we wrap up, is there thought that other Republican senators might join this effort now that there's not the pressure? They won't be the deciding vote since there are more than enough already?
Yeah, Rand Paul said that there are at least 10 Republican senators who are willing to vote against this. There are a number of senators who haven't weighed in yet. I'm not entirely certain that it'll get to 10, but certainly there are some members who are beginning to oppose the president. Now, that could be dangerous for their own reelection chances, especially in a Republican primary, because he is so popular among the Republican base. But, you know, that's just a part of sort of clawing back that authority for Congress.
Reid, thanks a lot for joining us.
You got it.
That's Reid Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill. He was with us to talk about some of the week's news out of Washington, D.C., and a little bit of Wisconsin news in there as well. You can still share your thoughts on the House Speaker opposing impeachment, Milwaukee getting into the 2020 convention, or any of the other stories we've been talking about. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org.